Welcome to the 5G Techventory podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in 5G with some of the industry's leading minds.
Now it's time to introduce the panel. Panelists will do that a bit later, but the moderator of the panel is Dean Bubley.
Thank you.
Dean is the industry analyst and advisor advising industry players. So the floor is yours.
Thank you, Oscar. And yes, I'm an industry analyst and advisor. Company name Analysis, like this disruptive microphone. And some of you may also know me through my online alter ego, Disruptive Dean. I like to stress test ideas and talk about technology, especially wireless technology, in a way that sort of challenges preconceptions and brings out things that perhaps we don't talk about too much. I look at things that are overhyped and underhyped. And my view is that indoor wireless is underhyped. We do not talk about it enough, given its importance. I did a test in this room earlier on, and the Wi-Fi is not bad. I'm getting 25 meg up and down. And my roaming on cellular is 4G, not 5G. Downstream is poor, and upstream is terrible, at 10 kilobits a second. I'm not going to be running any metaverse off my phone, I can tell you that. I'd be better off with a pigeon. So this session is really to sort of highlight some of the issues and options and practicalities. And also, there's a lot of people who are probably non-technical in the room. And so we'll try and look at some of the policy implications of how we improve indoor connectivity as well as outdoor. So just to give a bit of background on this, is whenever we talk about 5G, we always talk about things like robotics, industrial automation, healthcare, medical use cases. And almost all of those are indoors, and we don't talk about it. Yeah, there are not many outdoor hospitals. Whilst you might have a robot taking material from building one to building two at a manufacturing plant, most of the actual action is inside the building, which is made of steel and concrete and is not very good at letting wireless signals in from the outside. There are important outdoor use cases, energy, rail, road, some emergency services, but about 80% of usage of smartphone usage is indoor, which implies that probably about 80% of value. And when you then include other devices, like say smart televisions, robots, medical equipment, all the home and consumer IoT, a lot of it ends up being over wireless inside a building, whether that's 5G or Wi-Fi or even Bluetooth or something else. I very, very rarely see policy documents that even have the word indoor or in building, which is strange given how important it is to all the economic benefits and social uplift that we expect. One important thing to contextualize the rest of the panel is there are lots of different indoor environments, and they all have challenges, opportunities, whether it's for cellular or for other technologies. So we need to think through what happens in public spaces like this, industrial settings, homes, and homes could be single buildings or what are called multi-dwelling units, apartment blocks. You may have thousands of buildings in a city, or hundreds in a city, perhaps thousands in a country. So anything you do needs to be able to scale to have a decent footprint. It's no good saying, oh, we can put this system in one or two buildings, a football stadium and the airport, because you've got another 100 that aren't being covered. So I think I'll just, as a bit of a context, just to sort of set the scene for saying this is a really complex arena. We'll hear about some of the technologies, some of the business models as well. And now I'd like to let the other panelists introduce themselves, starting off Zita from ACM and Berek. And hopefully we will have, if you click the green button, a few seconds, we should. There you go.
Yes.
Excellent. Magic. Indoor wireless technology. I have no idea what wireless network is used for that clicker or this microphone. It's not 5G.
Quite large clicker, yes. Thank you, Dean. And I will continue with the with setting the stage with high level overview. I'm a senior enforcement officer with ACM. That's the Authority for Consumer and Markets in the Netherlands. And I'm co-chair of the Wireless Network Evolution Group, working group of BEREC. And BEREC is the body of European regulators of electronic communication. And It's good to know that the BEREC office is located here in Riga. So in that respect, it's also kind of a home game for me. So what's the problem? Okay, well, there may be not a big problem yet, but in the near future, outside mobile networks may not be able to serve all indoor use. Mobile operators can only accommodate growing demand for data using higher frequency bands and lower transmission power, enabling smaller cells. So then that way you can make many smaller cells. But as Dean also pointed out, the modern buildings are less easily penetrated by higher frequency bands. And well, also I discovered this when I was in my hotel room. I could not make a call with my private phone, and I had to switch it to 3G from 4G to enable that. Well, there are different solutions emerging, but in most cases they are expensive. And in the past there were some relatively cheap solutions such as repeaters, but this differs per country, but in most cases they are not allowed anymore, or there are restrictions on it. And then there are of course all kinds of questions. If you have solutions, who should own that, who should pay for that, and where are they needed and where not? So it's not primarily on the radar for regulators and governments, but there are some countries that are doing they're doing things on that, but that differs widely per country. In many countries, indoor coverage is not mandated or not part of the frequency license obligations. And on the other hand, in most cases, only the license operators are allowed to use the license frequency bands. So also there's a kind of struggle going. And in many cases, where for instance, you have Wi-Fi, the problems are limited to phone calls and SMS. And they are still limited to cold spots, so certain areas and certain buildings. So if you're talking about solution, then you have the question, why should we introduce multiple indoor parallel infrastructures for wireless access? It can be more efficient if the infrastructure is shared between operators or between operators and a third party. But there are several regulatory challenges, and probably also the solution is still expensive for households and SME. But in most cases, Wi-Fi is already there, so the solution may be simple, enabling voice calls and SMS over Wi-Fi, and that happens already. But it's not always working. For instance, when roaming, there are certain limitations to the IP ranges that are supported by your home operator, and there sometimes it goes wrong. There might be Wi-Fi, but you may not have a login for that. So there can be solutions like federative single sign-in solutions, such as Eduroam, which some people of you may know, that is used by students to just open their laptop at whatever education facility they are, and they have access. And of course, the question is, what will happen when the indoor availability and quality of mobile voice calls and SMS will further decrease? Then the use of alternative services, non-number-based services, such as WhatsApp, Skype, etc., will increase. And also in that case, we need to ensure the reachability of emergency services, which is now limited to phone calls with numbers, to and from telephone numbers. Okay, this is my introduction.
Great, thank you. Next speaker is Aigars Runcis from LMT. Aigars.
Yeah, hi there. My name is Aigars Runcis. I'm Venture Department Director at LMT. And guys, here's the answer about your gigabytes. So all gigabytes are already used by locals. This is a slide we are very proud of, that Latvia and Latvians, we are the most gigabyte users per SIM card in OECD. And we have worked hard to be in this first place. And actually, if we take us, LMT as an operator, our users are even more ahead in those numbers. So a little bit about LMT. We are not only a mobile operator, we find ourselves as an ICT company. And in last 10 years, we have spent a lot of time doing innovations and waiting 5G to come. And it's very easy to talk about 5G in presentations, in slides. But speaking about particular use cases and appliances for 5G technology, it's hard to find. We realized it a few years ago, and that's why we started to build our capabilities, being ready for this 5G today or 5G future. And so we have heavily invested in our innovations and R&D, developing our IT skills and system integration skills. And we are doing that heavily using EU funds. So we are proud partners in certain projects, many partners cooperating with. And here are only some of projects named where we are partnering, discovering those 5G or future 5G use cases in specific spheres. And this is how we are doing that. We are establishing a lot of test beds. For example, we are proud of having first 5G defense test bed in Europe. It's located in Adige. It's a very special place because you can find there 13 NATO nations in one place. And so they all have ability to test their use cases for 5G and this being future-proof in upcoming years and challenges. And so we also have a lot of other test beds deployed in a variety of EU projects. And so we test our future solutions. And those are verticals where we are heavily interested in IoT and smart city, defense and public safety, drones and mobility. So in those particular verticals, we do have some product portfolio we are developing. And of course, this indoor coverage is one of our sphere of interest where to earn new money. So this is briefly it from my side.
Thank you. And just in terms of LMT's sort of indoor focused activities, do you implement in-building systems in places like this or some of the verticals you mentioned? Do you have particular units within the radio team or your team?
Of course, we do. We have a particular business which is called a system integration business, and we are looking in our customer particular use cases where 5G indoor coverage could be an answer for their challenges. We do not it for sake of technology. It's not about 5G, some being tech savvy, but we are using, we are closely looking at particular use cases where can 5G as the best possible technology and solution be applied in particular cases. For example, we have pilot projects with some manufacturers here in Latvia where 5G coverage in their spaces is the best solution.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Mikael.
Thank you very much. So, Mikael Lundman, I'm CEO of a company called Proptivity, and we actually address exactly the problems we have been discussing here. So we build indoor networks. How it's typically done today is that you have mobile networks that are outside the buildings, and they of course provide a good service, especially outside the buildings. But with the high frequencies that we have in 5G and also the more modern building materials, you effectively stop the signals. And we have seen this very much in Sweden, where we started. We have live buildings there. It's very hard for a real estate owner to actually understand what type of service can I get in my building. If I have a tenant calling me asking if they have coverage in there, I don't even know what to answer, right? So the more we see evolution of use cases, so there is a lot of examples with ride sharing, for instance. You should have cars in the basement. But it's very hard to unlock the car if you don't have coverage. So then you end up with cars in the basement, which you can't use. Just to give one example. I think a lot of you have been in elevators. A bit difficult to keep a connection. And that's typically with voice. If you go video, it's a factor of 30 or 100 more bandwidth that is needed.
Yeah, you don't want to be an elevator engineer with an AR headset relying on wireless.
Exactly. And I mean, these use cases are hitting us everywhere right now, but there's no solution indoor. And then I think on top of that, there's also different operators. So it's very good. We have a competitive environment for operators. But then when you start to deploy indoor, it starts becoming a little bit more difficult. Right? Should you build 3 or 4 parallel networks indoor? Or should the operators as competitors start to work together? Also very, very difficult. So our solution is that we build one network, super high performance, and we connect then all the operators. So what we do, we basically build the dedicated indoor networks. It's actually invested from the real estate segment. So they are the ones taking care of their buildings. And then the operators can connect. And by doing so, we really enable a high quality, predictable indoor coverage. It will allow for all the operators to sell their services to their end users in there. So that's shortly what we do.
And the term for that is usually neutral host.
Yes.
And I think that's a phrase which is part of a broader trend towards infrastructure sharing. So you're familiar with tower companies or maybe fiber networks with multiple tenants because they're open access. Neutral host is in that same category, but it applies for, well, not just in building, but also in city centers and possibly other settings as well. Thank you all. I just want to drill now into a little bit more about what we see about the applications, because we've heard voice and SMS, we've heard, you know, some of the industrials things, you know, but there's a whole lot of other things that we're expecting. I mean, half this event is about metaverse, it seems, but also, you know, we've talked about healthcare and other things. But are you seeing any other use cases that are going to be really essential for indoor use that already people are talking about?
I mean, I think a very typical one is just the laptop. Today, you're typically always connected to a Wi-Fi network, but it starts to become more and more sensitive to connect to public Wi-Fi and guest Wi-Fi. You have a lot of visitors in your building. So if all of them always should connect to guest Wi-Fi, they might need to get a permission from their IT department and so on. And then you have regulated, like banks and others, who are not even allowed yet or now to connect. You have people working in public services that are not allowed to connect on any type of network. So I think there's a very clear shift now, especially when you look into the geopolitical situation, where security is super, super important. And connect to public Wi-Fi is not okay anymore.
Yeah, so I mean, certainly if you're here, you probably should be using VPN at the very least, if not. But okay, so we've got the laptop and compute connectivity. Other things, you know, Igars, are you seeing other interesting use cases for indoor?
No, of course, no. It's a big debate. Is it 5G or is it Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi 6 technology the best applicable in particular use cases? And I think it depends, because we are proud owners of our daughter company, Santa Monica Networks, and they are very, very, very high-level experts in providing indoor coverage using Wi-Fi technologies. And, you know, we have great discussions between both of sides, us as mobile networking advocating for 5G and they advocating for Wi-Fi. And, you know, the answer is particular use cases. So I'm not saying that 5G is always the right answer. So you have to find those use cases. And where you rely or have to rely on network as a critical service or critical issue, in those cases, I would suggest to choose 5G.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I make recommendations is, in most buildings, we will need good 5G and good Wi-Fi. Yeah, because there's a bunch of things, most laptops and most tablets are Wi-Fi only. A lot of people don't want to access Wi-Fi on their phones if they have to go through a portal. So you've got some users and devices that are Wi-Fi only, some that are cellular only, and some that can use both. So if you've got the vehicle in the basement, that's going to be cellular. If you've got a smart TV at home, that's Wi-Fi. Yeah. We shouldn't forget that there's a lot of other things like consumer IoT. We talk about, you know, fridges and washing machines. They're more likely to have Wi-Fi than cellular. So you end up needing both. And then a bunch of actual special other technologies. So I don't know what this microphone's using, but it's not Wi-Fi and it's not 5G. And unless we change the world's audio-visual systems, which I don't think is going to happen, we have to think about lots of others as well.
Yes, well, then it's not only the division between Wi-Fi and 5G, but as you already mentioned, you have also different IoT and also PMZ protocols. PMZ is the term for microphones, etc. They are also interrelated in this problem, and also the related use cases.
Thanks.
So you mentioned a good point, Dean, that there are use cases for like end users, for customers, for us people, for example, browsing our phones or working with our laptops. But other use cases are for automation, for robots. You know, they rely on 5G and probably not always on Wi-Fi. And it's you know.
Yeah. In industrial settings, you'll have a real mix of, you've got some, particularly things that move, that might use 5G.
Yep.
Wi-Fi for things like handhelds, like a barcode scanner. And actually, a lot of things still use wires because you also need electricity.
Still, of course.
And the dirty secret here for a lot of Internet of Things is you need power as well as connectivity. And so if it's a camera or something like that that doesn't move, you probably use a wire.
Yeah, and energy and battery saving is a huge challenge for IoT industry, of course.
So I want to sort of take this on a bit, and I'm going to skip a couple of the questions because of partly time and just to fit in with the conversation and the people in the room. Who pays for better indoor wireless? You know, is it the operators? Is it the property companies? Is it end users? Is it the government? You know, because fundamentally there's an issue here sometimes, particularly with 5G, of public services on private property. So who picks up the bill? And I'm going to fire this one straight back at Mikhail, because I know you've got a view on this.
Absolutely. Now, I think first and foremost, it's always end user paying, right? One way or another, the end user have to pay for the service.
Somebody has to.
However, if you look into a property, a building, it's worth a lot of money. The ones who own that building want to take care of that building, want to provide a good service to their tenants. And in those situations, there is a high willingness for the real estate owner to actually invest and improve the building. If you look into the revenues per square meter for rent versus telecom, rent is actually much, much, much higher, somewhere around 30 to 100x more typically. So of course, it's a very high interest for a real estate owner who have a, you know, you provide water, electricity, and of course you need to have a digital infrastructure as well. So you have absolutely a willingness to pay there. You see a way to differentiate your buildings, but maybe you start with the more prime part of your portfolio if you want to provide gigabit 5G for everyone, right? But you also have use cases like in the garage with must work and so on. Then you have the perspective of demanding public services there as well. I'm not sure if there are any state money. In some cases there are, in other cases there are not. But I think the main interest is actually for the end user then to be into a building where your service works, and you're prepared to pay maybe 1% higher rent for that. I don't know.
Fair enough. Go for it. Go for it. See, it's, I'll be interested in your view, not just of who pays, but are they service providers in the eyes of regulators?
That's difficult to answer, but I wanted to react to Mikhail that I think that there really are good use cases for multi-tenant buildings, etc., for like neutral host or multi-operator solutions. But I'm not sure whether a normal user that's living somewhere or a small or medium enterprise would be able to afford such a neutral host or multi-operator solution. And
that's a very good question. I think when I look into my own company, we actually save money by not having Wi-Fi. So I think there's always different settings. In some large companies, you have an IT department, you invest in Wi-Fi. I think that's the way enterprise works. In smaller companies and maybe people have more of a nomadic working, I think you'll find different solution for it.
Guys, if I may jump in here, so in Latvia, what we have experience, it's always mobile operator problem. Developers, they are developing buildings, great office locations, but when people come in, it's like coverage-free zone, and they are calling us asking for some service. And what we are saying, hey guys, why it should be our problem, or at least our problem only? Because there is some regulation regarding, for example, running water or electricity or whatever utilities. You can't finish building without those utilities, at least public building. But you can easily finish building without connectivity, without internet in those buildings. And we found it not right, at least. And so we are trying to educate and trying to lobby some change of rules that it has to be defined in those rules that you have to provide connectivity in public offices. We have some very typical use cases. For example, when our national symbol, National Library, was raised, and when they came to finish that building, it was almost free of mobile network area, because probably it was meant so to dedicate that time for book reading or something, but we and other operators had to jump in last minute to provide all those settings to be covered there. Or the last example is Riga Circus building, so you can easily go there and just enjoy the show, because there will be no mobile coverage.
And the irony is that something like a circus, a bit like this room, is designed for Instagram. And if you can't, and actually this is actually an important thing about use cases is, right, now I might occasionally be posting on Twitter, but maybe the host next year or the moderator next year has a AR headset and they're live streaming to their millions of followers, but the network doesn't work. So yeah. They're like, I went to this really cool event, but you can't see it. One question though, if the enterprises are starting to pay for coverage, one of the things I see in some places is like, well, if we have to pay for indoor wireless, we want to own it. We want it as a private network, and then you roam onto us. And that's particularly starting to happen in the US, where there's spectrum available for it. I mean, there's all that. Does that change it? My understanding is in Latvia, there's no private network spectrum at the moment.
Yes, no.
But in many other countries in Europe, there is. Although at the moment it's private only. You can't blend private and public. So you have thoughts on
yes,
that?
Yes. Well, BEREC is not the body that deals with frequency. But of course, we have. You can't do without it. So, but there is a variety of solutions in countries. There are countries that have specific spectrum bands for private, and sometimes they are scattered to the whole spectrum bands, and sometimes they are on one piece. And well, there's debate: is it enough? And also, as you said, should it be specifically for private, because otherwise you are going to compete with the other networks, or should it be, well, kind of hybrid, also be used for hybrid? And also, are the operators, the mobile network operators, allowed to also use that private spectrum for private use? So
I'm gonna, thank you. And I guess, I mean, for you, do you at the moment, I saw the discussion about the maritime network this morning, which is sort of private. It's not indoor. It's a dedicated coverage solution, because it's offshore. But are you treating those sort of private networks for a factory or the defense as completely like, almost like separate islands, or can you use that for public coverage as well as the robots or the on-site machinery?
Again, depends on the use case, but usually we talk to some slicing in those particular use cases where particular slice is dedicated to particular use cases. In Latvia, at least, publicly and legally, you can't own frequencies, not being a mobile operator. I have heard about some other interesting cases, but I doubt that they are legal in that sense, and I don't think it's sustainable to base your business on something like that. But we use the we own the spectrum, and we can decide how to better manage in particular locations that. And so we are eager and we are looking forward for best solutions.
Interesting. Yeah. Certainly, increasingly around Europe, it is possible to get private spectrum for private networks. I could have a private network for my house if I want to buy a small cell and a core network. Mikael, you know, in the property side, are you seeing some property owners or developers say, either we would like to be an extra tenant with a private network on your neutral host system, or we want to start with a private network and add the neutral host capability second?
Now, I would say the most value is from the public services, no doubt. That's where you have most of the usage. You have an existing both demand and revenue. Then, of course, in the systems that are deployed, you have the possibility to also support private on it. But I would say, in general, there are very few private operators today who actually packetize services and go out with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's a market which is started to form up, but it has not really started in the market yet.
I agree. And certainly in Europe. I mean, my sense is that Europe has, at the moment, a slightly divergent path on this sort of indoor shared network to what I'm seeing in the US. And the UK is sort of somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure about Asia at the moment, but I think Japan might be following more the UK path. And in the US, I'm starting to see them use this locally available spectrum called CBRS, which was partly for private use, partly operators can use it outdoors for extra capacity. But there's just in the last 6 months, companies saying, including actually Meta, has 30 or 40 of their offices with this system. We are going to deploy our own indoor cellular network, and we will allow, I think in their case, AT&T and T-Mobile to essentially use our network for their subscribers when they're on in our building. It's a bit like the Wi-Fi offload, but mm-hmm. using mostly 4G, I think. The UK has an arrangement where the MNOs, the four mobile operators, agree on a mutually shared design and architecture and rules and specifications of security. So they can come to a company like yours and say, this is the one rule book, and it makes it much easier to build different locations. And then EU it hasn't quite got a policy as far as I can see yet, but it's started to talk about neutral host and sort of shared infrastructure. There's also some green reasons for that. Is that reasonable, Cesar, from what you're seeing in Europe at the moment?
You explained it. But in Europe there are a variety of also policies, but also uses of this of private networks. But it's a question of market power. If you are big enough, then to force operators to also have to access your networks to access users, then this may work. But until now, there were lots of places where the operators were a little bit reluctant to get there. But also in countries like the Netherlands, you have this kind of multi-operator solutions hosted by third parties.
Cool. I'm going to be asking in about 4 minutes for questions from the room and also online. But just to sort of wrap up on this section of the panel, what do we need to do to get governments and regulators to talk about indoor more, or think about indoor wireless more, take it more seriously, either whether it's around regulations, whether it's about looking at the competition rules or even building and construction rules, maybe even diverting some of the subsidy funding to indoor rather than outdoor? What can we do either to get governments to pay attention, and what should they do when they get it?
I think a lot of discussions and education needed to be in place to educate decision makers in those questions, because there's a lot of myths about what does it mean, and nobody wants to live close to 5G base station. But guys, why? This is something great, and because you have great coverage, you can use all the connectivity benefits and you know, etc. But it's a huge question.
The irony being that the closer you are, the lower power it needs to be, and the lower power your phone needs to be. If you have a small cell,
you know the basics, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone wants a Wi-Fi base station yeah. nearby. So
it's easy to sleep near the router. The router, yeah. And the base station is something what scares you. What's wrong with you guys?
Mikhail, I'm going to move this on. What would you like to see from governments and regulators? What sort of do you, when you look at a new country, what do you look for?
Yeah, I think like this in general. To get a market to work efficiently, you need different layers in it, right? You need operators to be able to compete with each other. But I think in telecom today, you see a starvation of capex. All operators have quite much debt on the balance sheet. Interest rates are going up. They still need to keep the dividends level. What do? You cut capex. So there's a big risk now that the investments into 5G will be starved. So I think we need to look at the infrastructure layer much more closely and make sure that we get funds into the infrastructure. It's like if we build cars, but we don't have roads, right? So we need to make sure that there's actually a very positive view from regulators and from operators to make sure that we pour capex into the infrastructure, because that's the only way to enable the services, and that's the only way to drive efficiency in the society. So that's what we are looking for. Do we have operators who actually are open to this? Do we have regulators who see the value of us bringing much more capex into the system?
Yeah, because there's CAF funds, for example, to build outside 5G base stations, but I'm not aware about funds to build some base stations or some small cells or something indoors. Right?
I mean, it strikes me that we end up, whether it's using 5G or fiber, we talk about gigabit to the building. Why do we talk about gigabit to the room? Yeah, frankly, it doesn't matter up to a point if it's upgrade Absolutely. The Wi-Fi or you put better fiber with an Ethernet port or whether it's 5G indoor solution. Yeah, something like that, which might cut through. I mean, so from your point of view, how do we, you know, within BEREC even, what's the process to put wireless indoors further up the agenda?
In BEREC, of course, BEREC is an association of all the regulators, and there every year a new working plan is made with suggestions from the industry. There are questions to the industry and also suggestions from the new from every regulator, and then a work plan is made up, and that will be achieved in the next year. But it's not a very flexible process in the sense that halfway a year, it's not easy to change the work plan. Although if it really is necessary, there are ways. But
so it sounds like we need to be persuading whoever's running the work plans, yeah, probably a year in advance. This is what needs to be in the next one. Okay, that's great. Right, we're about to run out of time on this part of the panel, so I'm going to hand back to Oscar, and either if you have questions, I know there's a poll, and then I can take questions from the room as well.
Yeah, thank you for that. Regarding the poll, it seems to be the most popular answer about challenges for the indoor 5G is the integration of indoor 5G with existing infrastructure and systems. So. But closely followed by the answer overcoming regulatory barriers related to indoor 5G. So these are the answers by our spectators online. Thank you for that. And one question that came through this system is, it's quite specific, I think. Are there use cases for fully private indoor networks for full security and determinism? For example, that AR lift engineer. Or is it too niche? So what do you think about it?
I know what I think, but I'm going to ask the panel.
No, definitely those use cases are very niche, but if somebody or anybody are willing to pay for that, it can be deployed, you know. And of course, as we discussed before, 5G provides, for example, enhanced security this critical infrastructure part, and if it's mandatory for particular use cases, and of course it can and must be deployed that way.
Right. I'll follow. I'll just say, yeah, there's already quite a lot of critical private networks in mm-hmm. historically they've been used in, you know, things like industrial settings, like mines or in oil rigs, places like that. they're now starting to go to general manufacturing facilities, to warehouses a lot as well, and other places using industrial automation. And typically the 5G, actually sometimes private 4G, is for devices, things that move. So things like AGVs, automatic guided vehicles, and also for cameras. And there's a really important thing here, which is if you have lots of security cameras or cameras for process automation and quality control, they send much more upstream data than they need downstream. And the way we set up the public networks usually is probably 3-1 down versus up, whereas in some industrial settings, you need to do it the other way around, which is one of the reasons why you might want a private network.
Yes. I know of container terminals who really want to have this whole system separated from the outside. So a real private solution, it can be 5G, and it's very good if it's 5G, but they want to have it, well, the independence is very important for those kind of users.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions in the room?
In the room. It's your opportunity to go home and say, I spoke in a microphone today.
Yeah, that's great. That's great, guys, please.
If I could ask your name and organization, please.
Hello, I hope I can sit down, right?
Yeah.
So my name is Lars Massare. I'm from Riga Stradinsk University. I'm a lecturer. But my question is related to healthcare, because this is actually one of the topic which was written, right? And I'm interested in, since I teach medical students and dentistry students and generally, which will be coming as a doctors later on. Nowadays, a lot of data already is inside in specific homepage. Like for example, Latvia, we have DataNet, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. where we have our data, doesn't matter what else we have, but this 5G in general, this Meta, which was talking also in opening ceremony, today, what about security? If our security actually will be reaching the same level as our development of the technologies. And actually, I was answering and Paul about the security, and I was surprised that the security actually didn't reach even the second place. So, okay, maybe the other is not so aware that it's our technologies with the security will reach in the top, right? But I'm still worried about security.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think there's two parts of security. We can. I mean, some of it obviously is the database and the sort of the stuff which is outside the building in the data center. But there's certainly a security angle for, you know, the information either you receive or send, whether it's from a medical device or for a phone inside a building. Any thoughts on security?
No, I'm just with Lasman. I agree. I would also vote for security in this poll if I could have an option there. And those are questions which closely come with 5G. They are providing enhanced security because of this network architecture in those cases. And I think it's also very 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 good use case for this medicine appliance and something. And also we haven't discussed today about those edge cases where it could be applied. But this is one of that.
Yeah, I think there are two answers to that. One is that security needs to be arranged on different levels. So if you want to have a service that's everywhere to be used, then you also have to take care of that it can be used on a crappy network and on a network that is not secure, by putting security measures on top of that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that, especially when you make things more distributed and more smaller, then at least the eavesdropping is harder. So if you have very small cells, then you really need to be there in that room to eavesdrop. And you have even optical wireless communication, which is now experimented, or Li-Fi, which is even smaller and even higher frequencies. So in that respect, that can also contribute to the safety, to the security.
Mikhail, I mean, presumably you have to prove to the operator partners that your network, part of the network, is as secure as theirs.
How does that work? Do you have like a internal security team to do that, or?
Yeah, and I think architecture, of course, very important. Typically, you don't mix cables with others, and then you make sure that you have good control of everything you do. You know, locked rooms, and then there are different type of protocols you use for that. But in essence, we build based on 3GPP, which everyone else is building on. From that point of view, we actually embed the security directly in. So we will be able to keep the same security as any operator.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions?
Mike's just coming.
Thank you. Oliver, Telia Estonia, your northern neighbors. I'm the head of radio in Telia in Estonia, so building those indoor networks. And my question, there was an idea in this, and I would like to get some more, everything from this. I mean, we were all talking about that the operators are in a capex cutting situation most oftenly. In the Mobile World Congress this year, everybody talked about that we invest and Amazon and Netflix take the money, right? So mm-hmm. all sorts of pressure from this. So, and having this, your analog to watering and electricity, that indoor should be a question to landlord, maybe not to an operator, but how to convince them in every sense of way. Is it only legislative part, or how to convince them that it's super important and they should do that and they should pay for this too? It's for their sake.
I suppose the difficult question there is, if they come back to you and go,
very complex question,
they say, well, that's okay, but 80% of usage is indoors on my network, so do I get 80% of the monthly subscription?
Yeah, that's what they do. And that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But then we say that, yeah, I mean, we have some options to sell something, but and it's your money. But actually, then end of the day, this is, as I said, Netflix and Amazon who take the money from this super network, maybe, if it's some sort of an open
I see
space.
That we share the common pain in that related question, and there's no one or super easy answer. This is so complex to cover all the ecosystem. At least we are talking a lot of bodies, governing bodies, end users, our B2B customers, how to educate them and give this message about that you should change rules, regulations, and also you as a customer, you have to, as I mentioned before, not be scared of living close to a 5G station, you know, because this is the future or other way. So there will be no connectivity, and there will be no all those promising 5G use cases we talked about.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, though, I think that Amazon, which owns Eero, will just say, okay, here's a free Wi-Fi mesh, and we'll use Wi-Fi instead. I realize there's not been any, you know, we try to get a speaker from the Wi-Fi industry on this panel, but they're all at another event next week. So that's why we couldn't quite get that balance. But I would like to wrap up and for you all to thank the panelists. Oscar, I don't know if you've got wrap up as well, but certainly from my point of view, this has been really good. Very glad to have these speakers here. And you know, my message takeaway is just to get our policymakers to think more about indoors in all its technologies, its locations, its applications. Let's bring it up the agenda one way or the other. Thank you.
And the good news is that some of policymakers are actually here present in the room, so that's also very good. Thank you very much for the panelists and also for wonderful moderation.
Thank you.